Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
This is episode 2 of reading or paraphrasing this, children's books, Events and Outcomes, of the American Revolution by Dale Anderson. It's quite a good book. And for us Aussies, it's sort of hard to put all the facts together. You hear little bits and pieces going up in things like the Brady Bunch. And what is it, Lost in Space? They talk about Benedict Arnold. We know about the Boston Tea Party. But we didn't know that this was a series of tit-for-tat trade wars. The UK actually fought with America on trade and had all these exercises, had a single exercise on tea left, and the East India Company, which just newly went into India because India was vacated in the 7 Years' War. So England suddenly expanded and had this expansion problem. They also expanded and took over French America. So almost been given too much of a good thing, and introduced something called the Quebec Act. So they had a series of acts. I think there's the Coercive Acts. I don't know what the Coercive... the Coercive Act... was that you had in Massachusetts or in Boston, the problem area, they had the worst thing was taking away the courts, putting in representatives, and meaning that you had to billet a British soldier. That was almost laughable to think of it now. And then they had taken over some newly Catholic lands, and if they said Catholics couldn't hold positions in government, there'd be no one there. So they had various things, and the Americans got more and more emboldened, and the individual colonies began to have a circular letter raising representation. So that's where we're up to at the moment, and I'm trying to paraphrase things. I'll stop every once in a while if I run out of my understanding of things. Now, there's a John Locke, which I really want to go back again. He's 1632 to 1704. So he's the sort of the primary Enlightenment philosopher, which is just a little bit after Newton. There's the Fire of London in 1066, so Newton's around that time, I think. He was applying sort of, as Newton's finding universal laws of physics, he was finding universal principles of government. And his principle of government is that you see a king and their subjects, the subjects have assented. Have sort of accepted that the best outcome is having the king. And so the government, to actually work, they've got to, you buy your place in society by paying taxes, and then society, there's a mutual obligation, taxation without representation is one thing. So the Americans were obviously early on driven by taxation. They didn't want to pay taxes. They didn't want to be interfered with. And it was only at this brief point in time that if you didn't want to pay taxes, you would talk about rights rather than just rebel. You would talk about rights and then rebel. It's sort of the new rights. So the American prism of looking at of individual rights, their rights and relative power and trade, it's all built up here. So you've got John Locke, and he wrote his treatise on government in 1690, so that's towards the end of his life. 1690 is a good, being hanging around for a good 50 years. It's sort of interesting that a lot of philosophies nowadays that I read about are 50 years old. The interesting, they sort of mature, age in oak for a certain amount of time. Now, the American colonists believe that if you're going to tax, you have to have representation, where the British view believe that if you're being protected, you have to be taxed. So you had these two different things. There's a little bit of a quote here. It's from the Stamp Act Congress of 1765. So the Stamp Act is, you know, well, we just got to get tax out of you guys. Rather than tax a physical object, we're going to tax a concept. And of course, that you know, the Americans didn't know how to handle that, and so they had a Congress. This is where they come together. It's interesting that Congress is now really official, whereas Congress was just a meeting. You know, a Congress of historical societies wouldn't do much. But here, the Americans, the people of these colonies are not, and from their local circumstances, cannot be represented in the House of Commons in Great Britain. Whereas the British view, it says, there can only be one supreme power, which is the legitimate to all the rest and must be subordinate. So it sort of is a certain logic. You can't have two heads. Although you've got separation of powers, you could imagine them doing it different ways. Another quote of Grenville, who's the governor. If Great Britain, under any conditions, gives up her right of taxation, she gives up her sovereignty, which is inseparable from it. So this is taxation and sovereignty, which of course we, you know, the soft power and all that type of stuff, all gone. Now we're on to chapter two. So the first Continental Congress put some put a declaration forward up to it, and I'm just going to stop here while I have a quick read of this to refresh my memory. So just picking up, the first Continental Congress, which were circulated against these acts, the British responded rather well. In actual fact, they said that we will acknowledge your Congress if you acknowledge us as the supreme power. You have the right to tax and raise militia, which is interesting. But they single out Boston for specialist treatment, which is sort of rather strange. This is Massachusetts, because they were rebelling, and they put on prohibitions on them from fishing, so that this would begin to squeeze. So the nice to one group was bad to another, and of course. Being bad to one group meant that there was, although their appeasement seemed, if you didn't know what they were doing, it would seem rather strange. It would seem that they were still mean. And now the colonies were preparing to fight, and they developed something in Massachusetts called the Minuteman, because on a minute, notice these people would suddenly, I suppose it's like guerrilla warfare, would be in the fields one day, and the next fields in front of you, and then the British, who had 700 soldiers, marched out of Boston to the town of Concord. So they marched along, and in front of it, there's famous people, which even us Aussies know about, Paul Revere, and he would shout. On the road to Concord, the regulars are out, to tell the Minutemen to assembly, and Paul Revere urged Hancock and Adams, who were the generals, to flee. At Lexington, so Lexington is a place, apparently, not just a famous aircraft carrier. The POMs came up against some 70, so 70 versus 700, and they just blew the stuffings out of the 70. Eight of them died, 10 were wounded, and there was one British soldier hurt. But at Concord, a stronger American force harassed them all the way back to Boston. So at Concord, they were pushed back. And the importance of this aspect, and that the British lost a fair amount. Let's see. They lost 73, 10% of their forces, 174 wounded. They were just really whacked. So you can imagine a frontal force not working against it. Now, the next thing is a Congress divided. So the New England militia that were that harassed them set up and sieged Boston. And then Gage, who is the general in charge, so he was the... they said, look, New England, we're just really pissed off with you, Boston. And so it's hard to imagine. You sort of get a feeling of that. I must admit, Boston was... I've been there for an optical fiber conference. I didn't really get this feeling of them. So they got really upset with Massachusetts. I can't quite remember why. That was from the Tea Party. They threw out the tea, and then they said, okay, off with your government. We're going to impose martial law. And, he declared martial law in Massachusetts. That's where the soldiers could come in, and you'd, civilians would have to face martial courts. But they contained this by sieging them up in Boston. So in mid-May, this is beneath New York is Philadelphia, which is apparently quite a large city. They had another Congress. And the delegates heard about Lexington, where the British sort of blew them away and then were pushed back. The militia had captured two forts, New York's Lake Champlain. One fort, called Tico de Gora, yielded a rich store of guns and supplies. So this is sort of strange that we're going to beat the fuck out of them and we're going to bring up all these things and you actually just give them supplies for it. The Congress had was just a group meeting. It seemed to them that there was a war developing. Because the war was developing, the Congress said, oh, we're going to raise troops. It's just bizarre. I can't imagine myself. And they chose George Washington, a famous person, we now know, a Virginian person, be command of the Continental Army. So that means of the continent, means of the American continent, and they did. So you can sort of imagine what this person was like. John Adams of Massachusetts, so he's going to be the first, second president, who had nominated Washington, wanted a Virginian to command the New England Army. He thought this would keep the colonies united. Washington took the post humbly. So, rather than putting so that's interesting for us that Washington was selected because he was a Virginian. You can imagine he's probably had an American accent. I know he had wooden teeth, all this type of stuff. And I'll truly have to quote here. And then, so we now know the politics of why George Washington was there, because they wanted to actually drag the rest of the colonies into the war. I have this gravure up here in the page, and I'll read it to you. Ethan Allen captured Fort Ticonderoga. Sorry, you Yanks, you. That's the best in the Aussie can read it. And it says, in the name of the great Jehovah and the Continental Congress, that's he captured it in name. Many of the soldiers, including the commander, were awakened by the attack. So they just, you know, really, they didn't know what was going on. So it was sort of, it was an attack, but they really, you know, it was basically a war crime, as far as I can see. They didn't know they were at war, and they just took it over. I declare, this is what Washington said, I declare with the utmost sincerity, I do not think myself equal to the command I'm honoured with. This George Washington, he's an enigma to me. I'll have to read a biography of him at some stage. Given his past record, he might have been correct. So if he was in charge of the Virginia militia, he never won a battle. But perhaps losing battles and seeing how things are lost is probably less of a fantasist, which is good. Okay, and so before Washington arrived, they fought the Battle of Bunker Hill, and even us Aussies know a little bit about Bunker Hill. Now, Bunker Hill is, I don't know where it is, it was actually fought on Bede's Hill, not on the back of Bunker Hill. So they 1,500 colonists, so that's a lot of people back in those days, got in a bunker, and the British fired on it from the sea, so it must have been a coastal thing. I don't know where it is there. And what happened is that the cannons fell short, so they were just saved, and I think they had three waves, and the British took it. The Americans got 140 wounded, which is, you know, like 10%, and the British lost 220, sort of like the Marines. Now, the thing, this is the Battle of Bunker Hill. The Bunker Hill said, you know, this is bizarre, you know, what the heck? You know, the British were just sewing chinks in their armour. So, the Congress, which is sort of like your pre-American government, this is not the Congress, but this is actually a meeting. So, you got the Second Congress. Congress was a bit divided. And so, not all wanted independence, a lot were still loyalists. And so, they wrote a letter to King George III. Now, I'm just thinking, before, have they actually drawn have they already erected this statue to King George III? I can't remember. I think there's this feeling combination. I think they're going to erect the statue to King George III. Very important thing, erecting a statue to a person. This shows people, I think here, a lot of people think an administration is sort of separate. So we've got the merchants feeding, they apply pressure to the merchants. Parliament's their sore point, which is going, and then they've got the king. Now, I just see... Yeah, I just wonder, I'll just have to go through, I'll stop here for the moment and see if I can work out when they erected this statue to King George III. Okay, continuing to read, let's try to get things across my head. The Congress, which is the group of colonies meeting out, wrote to King George, so they're trying to test the way forward. And there's a few quotes from what they wrote to King George. One mind resolved to die free men rather than to live like slaves, even though they were enslaving everyone. It's not pretty amazing. And then they said to the king, we mean to not to dissolve our union with Great Britain, which has so long unhappily subsisted between us. You know, think. Now, the king, who you've got to remember is a... this is a German King George III. So the four kings, the Glorious Revolution, four Georges, and I think he was outright mad. He didn't read the petition, and he also declared that the colonies were an open rebellion. Sort of, you can imagine. Well, he's not very well educated, is he? That's Cam. Now, in the autumn of 1775, the Yanks said, "Well, we're just going to be assholes, but we're going to go up and capture Canada," and they took Montreal. So, Montreal fell to the Americans. So there was a bit of a there's a lot of I suppose, contest in there. They eventually pulled out of Quebec, but the colonists were a bit all over the place. So a lot of loyalists felt the War of Independence was the fault of the rebels, which I think that might be a fair thing to say. And you divided, so your backyard Trump voters in back thing were voting for King George III. In fact, if I really want to say something, looking at here, I can see an incredible resemblance between King George III and Donald Trump. In fact, in so many ways, I think they are the same thing. I think King George III has time-travelled through to be Donald Trump. Now they talk about the propaganda war, which to me is really Fox News, and they said reconciliation is now a fallacious dream, and then common sense is working a powerful change in the minds of men. So this is, you believe CNN, this is all true. And, you know, all these people dress up in suits and say, so-and-so is the actual cause. The Americans are going downhill because of video games and all that type of stuff. And now the king, of course, who is, you've got to remember, is a German, is hiring German mercenaries. Now, it's interesting, I don't know whether it comes up here, the Americans, when the German mercenaries came across, offered them a bit more, they offered them free land. Now, General Gage, if you remember, was in is your lord with so many people, the hapless British soldiers. Can I imagine, you know what, certain things, certain groups of soldiers, I can imagine the whinging. You can imagine the English soldiers just whinging, oh God, why do we have to be here? Oh, it's cold here. Who said I didn't want to be here? Can you imagine Gage blowing up? So what happened is that they got they rocked up in the middle of the night, and this great thing, and they captured this fort, got all the guns, and they basically surrounded Boston and blew the stuffing out of it, and the British. By late 1776, John Adams concluded that the colonies needed to separate from Britain. So he, you know, I don't know what you're thinking of what they were trying to do. They sort of set up trying to get around tax, and then it sort of the pendulum swung. And so this is when they decided that if we're going to separate, we're going to have a distinct creed, and wrote out the Declaration of Independence. So you've got Adams and Benjamin Franklin, who's pretty smart, and then from reading it, it's Thomas Jefferson, who's the person who's written it. And they've got a picture here, which I think has to be a complete fake, because if Thomas Jefferson looked at the swivel chair, I would say that he doesn't have it. Now, the interesting thing, I think, for the Declaration of Independence is that they could write it out so well, and they obviously didn't have word processors back at that time, so it's written out beautifully. Now, I'm just going to read you. Americans, make sure you've got tissues, think, because it's going to blow your... it's going to make you cry. However, this is, I find, incredibly interesting in that Thomas Jefferson did a Declaration of Independence to free his, you know, a slave he was representing, and the American judge said, oh, what a crock of shit, and just closed it off. But he gets a chance to write it a second time. This is just shows that not all bad luck is incredibly full-on bad luck. Okay, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, except the Negroes, who managed to get counted at 3/5. I like that. They're 60%. Is that right? 3/5? Yeah, they're 60% of a white person in terms of counting. That means because there were just too few people in the southern states. It's also interesting that Virginia was the most redneck state. Sort of Kentucky. That they are endowed with their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Okay. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. So this is Locke, so John Locke gone mad, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, which is John Locke. That's just basically, he should have said, as my mate said, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and institute a new government. Is that a quote from... you know what? I thought this is the... I said, that sounds so much like John Locke. That's surely they didn't write that in, because that's a direct rip-off, I'm sure. But then I read here... the second section used ideas from John Locke to explain the principles of the colonists believed in. Oh, well, it is. Okay. The third section, so there's different sections. I don't know what the first section was. The opening explains the declaration was written, a decent respect to opinions of mankind forces Congress to detail why it's taking such a step. So while we're taking it, then the second bit is the principles of the Enlightenment. So their introduction is just, rather than these principles, we're here today to discuss this very important thing. I'm gathered here today, my friends, sort of, because it's bloody obvious, you've just decided to do it. Then it's the principles. The third section was a bit more they're just really upset. So the Americans decide to, well, let's go for the king and not parliament. So if they go for both, they know they're stuffed. And I think the third part also said, we're going to get rid of slavery. Oh, here comes the king. Oh, so this is a picture of the king. I love the idea of George III. In my new opinion, the Americans have not learnt to do anything else but trade wars. They were built on trade wars. And King George III is really Donald Trump. However, it says here, the 2 tons of lead in New York City statue of George III were melted down to make musket balls. You know what? I wonder whether the lead was actually just put on the base of the statue, because it's beyond me, or something like that. The 2 tons were in the base, so the statue would sit there and not be blown over. I don't quite understand, because 2 tons of lead is not a lot of lead. Okay, so a cubic meter of water is a ton. 2 tons of lead is really not a lot. It's like several large briefcases full. Okay, that's in terms of volume. So they've written out the Declaration of Independence, and it's a beautifully written document. The handwriting is fantastic. These people have certainly got it. And to think that Hamilton wrote. I just wonder what Hamilton wrote. He apparently wrote all these things in Congress. I've got to remember it. Hopefully we'll do it across here. So the Declaration, and it's essentially the Declaration meant that the United States was, it's treason. You know, obviously, King, you know, stuff you up your nose. Oh, yes. So John Adams, who's the second president, said the greatest question was decided, which ever was decided in America, obviously. And then they said, the 2nd of July, because 2nd of July is when they had, I think the vote was fully filled on the 4th of July. 2nd of July will be celebrated by succeeding generations as a great anniversary festival. The day ought to be solemnized with pomp and parade, with shows, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfire, and illumination, and from one end of the continent to the other. What, i.e., he's thinking north to the south rather than east to the west, obviously. I like the fact that he's got the idea that you let your gun, you can imagine a gun-toting American going off. So obviously, if your king is that they did the olive branch, they're not the king's a bit of a German in there. And it's interesting that the Germans come in and play. The Germans train the army, and then the Germans are mercenaries, and then the Germans eventually turn up in U-boats a while ago. Now, there's a big thing that it is very interesting that here the French are saying, oh, I've lost the Seven Years' War, I'm just going to make it a bit of a shit for you. And they began to support the Americans. And so Spain and France lost big to England. So Spain and France donated money to the US. And donating money to the US sucked money out of their economy, sent them nosediving, and made them poor. So they had to raise more taxes, which led to the French Revolution. It's sort of, I love this interconnection. Okay, so the end of the Seven-Year War is coming to an end, and they have Staten Island. And that Staten Island, I now know, is where the Statue of Liberty is. So if you've got Manhattan, Staten Island, and let me recall, you've got Staten Island, the Bronx, Staten Island, Manhattan, the Bronx, and then over the river, I don't quite understand this, you've got Queens and Brooklyn. I just don't understand the whole of it there. So he has a huge 32,000 troops. So that's a fair number of troops back in those days. So they won a smashing victory on Long Island, which is a bit of Manhattan. Is forced to retreat. So I think you can't retreat down. You have to retreat north. The British fleet destroyed American ships on Lake Chamberlain. So Lake Chamberlain is that U.S. place. I don't know how, if it's a lake, how the British ships got into the lake. Let's see if there's a picture here to go. So Lake Chamberlain, we'll have to have a look at this at some stage. And do I have a Lake Chamberlain here? A Chamberlain here? Lake Chamberlain here? Here? Picture? No, I've got Lake Superior, Lake Michigan. Like, no Lake Chamberlain. I'm sure it's must be a small lake. And it must be a lake which British ships can suddenly turn up on. So I can't imagine a large British ship suddenly appear, so I'll have to look up what Lake Chamberlain is. We've got the propaganda war. Okay, and it's looking bad. A few days later, so Washington suffered defeat in White Plains. So I know that you're not going to have a US aircraft carrier called the White Plains. It'll be called Lexington and Ronald Reagan. And can you imagine there's going to be an aircraft carrier called the Donald Trump? It's going to be the best ever aircraft carrier. It looks like a rowing boat, but it's big. It's got extra levels. Okay. And so the colonists lost two forts in New York City. So is New York still, is New York taken by the British? So long, I can't understand it. Washington is forced to retreat to Pennsylvania, which is south, with Howe hot on his heels. Congress fled to Philadelphia for safety. So was Congress in New York to start off with? I suppose it would be. In July 1776, the Second Continental Congress had boldly declared independence. Now the colonist army seemed about to lose it. There you go. Okay, here we've got a big quote. All men are created equal. Okay, now the thing is that a big section is that all men are created equal was actually thought by Thomas Jefferson. This is just a little aside bit. There's a few American slaves out in the First Fleet. One was a sharp shot called John Randall. So there's sort of an interest in how this goes. I was going to read this thing about Lafayette. Lafayette is just dumb enough. He just appears to be slightly a bit dull. Lafayette. Sorry, if you Americans would really love all this type of stuff. There's this problem. It says a famous Dr. Samuel Johnson wrote about the bit of contradiction here. How is it that we hear the loudest yelps for liberty amongst the drivers of Negroes? And here's a small thing. James Armistead. Now, the interesting thing is that his name is probably given by his slave owner as James. They're all John Thomas and things like that. He spied for General Lafayette at the French general's request. The Virginia granted Armistead his freedom. What is a French general? What are the French doing in America? Get out of there. Some progress. To later generations, this apparent historicity stains the revolutionary cause. While slavery did not end the revolution, and even Jefferson's declaration did benefit from African Americans to some extent, several states made it illegal to import slaves. So I think it was illegal in the British, throughout the British Empire. You could also sort of say that mechanization and the Industrial Revolution made slaves redundant, and so you got a huge number of people there. In like, if you've got an old machine, you can just throw it on the scrap heap. If you've got slaves, they're just there, you know, sitting there. You know, they don't die. There's actually more of them at the end. The declaration was just pretty mad. It's pretty interesting about how people sort of set the American Civil War. The American Civil War is just absolutely amazing. It was so ferocious and so full of glory. It's just an amazing thing. And it's sort of so amazing. The American Civil War is just, you know, the Gatling guns and the colourful uniforms. It was just, you know, just like an ancient Napoleonic War with a bit more Industrial Revolution. It's like Napoleon. It's like the Industrial Revolution really caught up and just sort of handed America what it just really wanted. Yeah, and so the problem is that once you got slaves, you could actually breed themselves like a mushroom farm, I suppose to be. Okay, I'll just say a small section here. Slavery was abolished in Massachusetts because its state's constitution, written by John Adams. So it's John Adams who was in Massachusetts. He got the army up there, but then imported a southern general. While the United States did not recognize the connection between this principle and the treatment of Africans, at least some states did. So there you go. Oh, we've got a few. War. Now, chapter 3, winning independence. This is where the Americans, you know, just have such a fantastic time. Well, not quite. Okay, so the American crisis, he had tried to shore up the colonists' resolve. So this is, your Fox News. These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldiers and sunshine patriots will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of the country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of men and women. It's like there's the American thing about showing the American flag and saying, these colours won't run. So, now this is interesting. There was, it reminds me of the, we got to get the attack in before lunch. They've got to get the attack in before the 1st of January. So the Americans would sign up for a certain amount of time, do their tour and go home. And so there's a place called Trenton. Sounds sort of familiar, but I don't know where it is, in New Jersey. And Washington, with 1,200 men, Washington had more inexperienced men. On the 20th of September, British celebrate Christmas. Washington Army crossed the Delaware River. Next morning, it struck. The surprise attack succeeded brilliantly. The Americans, at a cost of only 4 wounded, captured more than 1,000 prisoners. So it's sort of like, you can imagine the officers. They say, past the, I wouldn't have turkey at this stage, past the, what do they have, boiled potato here, over here, I'm pointing out potatoes and that's all that. Oh, damn, what are those? What are those people, those Americans, they're going over the river? And see, they've got a beautiful picture here. This is the Washington crossing the Delaware River with the American flag. General Howe in New York was outraged at the British troops' surrender to a ragged thing, and so he said, I'm going to put a $10 bounty on Americans. So the American commander, meanwhile, offered a $10 bounty to convince many of his militia to re-enlist. Oh, that's interesting. So it comes in only at first. So the Americans, Washington was strapped against the river, the Cornwallis. The British sent 5,000 and trapped it. So they said, oh, George, we're just going to sit here. We've got you trapped there. You might stay in there for a while because we're just going to do what British... Oh, you've slipped away. Taking the back roads behind Cornwallis' line, their goal was the supply depot in New Brunswick. On the way, Washington's army drove off a small British fort at Princeton and forced the British to pull back. Too exhausted, though, to continue to New Brunswick, Washington's forces took up winter quarters in Morristown. The British stayed in northern New Jersey. The Battle of Trenton and Princeton had bought the Americans more time. In mid-March, Congress returned to Philadelphia. In weeks later, it passed a law to create the first flag of the United States. So, I do have to say, isn't that amazing? So, I've been to Princeton. I knew there was a small battle there. I didn't realize there was a small one. There is a problem with this picture of Washington crossing the Delaware and they're holding the U.S. flag because Delaware River. That's because it wasn't created until after he did. But small thing, the artist is probably knows more than I do. So in 1777, the British Army launched two new assaults. Unfortunately, they were planned separately and not coordinated. Gee, you need the Germans in helping you. One was aimed at New York, the other at Philadelphia. So obviously, New York hasn't fallen. That's an amazing sound. So they've got Staten Island there. They say, so you can imagine the US saying, you know what this place needs? I'd say, you know what this place needs? I think it needs a statue. So the Northern attack was led by General John Burgoyne, famous Aussie rules player, and planned to drive from Canada into New York so he could separate the rebellious New England from the other colonies. Oh, the ideal pincer movement. He just needed tanks, I think. So Burgoyne set out to Canada with nearly 8,000 men and captured Fort Ticonderoga in July, but its progress was slowed by mountains and dense forests, i.e. Canada. Look, Canada's just a pretty rough place if I've been there. By September, Burgoyne was south of Saratoga, so the Americans must have run to Saratoga because they have an aircraft carrier, New York, and he found the American army. Hi, Americans. The forces met on September the 19th. And the problem is that they didn't win a decisive blitzkrieg victory, and the Americans were able to reinforce. Now, I've got a lake here. So what is that lake that they had? Lake whatever it is. Just an amazing thing. Let's see if I can remember that lake with the... Just remember that lake with the bridge... Had the fort on it and all that type of stuff. I can't see it here. My godfather. Oh, God, there's rivers that walk all the way go through New York. The Hudson River goes a fair way up, almost up into Canada. At this stage, the map of the... Oh, amazing. With Burgoyne was marching south, Howe left New York City. left in New York City, he hoped to capture Philadelphia by sea rather than marching across New Jersey. Okay, so, wow, that's pretty weird. Could have stayed in New York and joined Burgoyne to destroy the American army at Saratoga. So where is Saratoga? So he went north, he went south instead. Congress had to flee Philadelphia once again. New American defeats at Polo Germantown followed. I wonder what... We had a Germantown, but we decided to rename it after in World War One. Now this is not looking good. In October, Burgoyne's force tangled with the Americans once again. The young American general, Benedict Arnold, led the American army brilliantly to defeat the British. The American general, Horatio Gates, took the credit, but Arnold had won the battle. Later, Arnold changed sides, and they say, due to falling in love with a loyalist woman, and it's always that way. You know, the best-looking women, I shouldn't say that, some pretty good-looking women in my youth, when I was, you know, was a question, had some pretty amazing belief systems. Burgoyne was forced to retreat. Within days, his army was trapped against the Hudson River. On the 7th of October, Burgoyne surrendered nearly 6,000 soldiers and almost 30 cannons. It was a stunning defeat for a force Burgoyne had called irresistible. God. No. What a loser. Well, he is a loser. British resolve and French aid. The news of surrender reached Britain. The government was determined to carry on the war. Critics suggested repealing the law that the Americans had objected to. But the idea was voted down. Instead, they said, will involve 30 million of war effort. And when reports of Farragut reached France, Franklin went to work. Then, soon after, France officially recognised the independence of the United States. Later, the two countries pledged and signed a treaty that made them allies. They pledged to continue fighting until the American independence had been won. Each promised not to sign a treaty with Britain without consent from the other. France agreed that any lands won from Britain in North America would belong to the United States. The treaty was a triumph for the Americans. Gee, God, the Americans should be rightfully thankful to the French, shouldn't they? Now, the chill in Pennsylvania, we sort of know this rather well. Now, there's a picture here of von Steuben, who spoke no English, gave his orders in French, and then they were translated to... And then they were translated. So here's a crowd trying to actually make this ragtag rebel into the US Navy SEALs. And so this diplomatic success came when Washington was stuffed. And so he was in something called Valley Forge outside Philadelphia. And it was a miserable winter. It almost sounds like the English complaining. Poor food, hard lodgings, cold weather, fatigue, nasty clothes, nasty cooking. I can't endure it. Why are we sent here to starve and freeze? What sweet felicities have I left at home? Well, there you go. Okay, looks like this. The army at Valley Forge survived by eating fire cakes, flour and water cooked on hot stones, which we in Australia call damper, and it's not that bad if you do it properly. Men and officers grumbled about Washington's leadership. A group of officers even joined a few members of Congress to discredit Washington, hoping to have him relieved by General Horatio Gates, the self-proclaimed victor of Saratoga. But you realise that it was actually Benedict Arnold. Steps were taken to improve the delivery of food and supplies. Parties began to seize livestock and food from the loyalist farms nearby. Soldiers survived the awful winter. Meanwhile, the German officer who served with the American army made his time useful. Baron Friedrich von Steuben drilled his troop every day, taught them how to march and fight in formation. And still disciplined, he turned a collection of farmers and labourers into a modern American army. Okay, that's enough for today, and that's me trying not to read literally, but read this book, and we're up to page 37, and look, the Americans look as though they're on the ascendancy. They've just suddenly got the French in. Oh, it doesn't go. We've got Yorktown, and a peace negotiation, Treaty of Paris, but it goes on and on. Orderly transition, that's the American Revolution is not over in a tick, but it's pretty sad for the Poms and for the English and for the American Indians.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.